Yeah, Austin is like his face is distorted and it doesn't look like Panera's.
Austin, what is up with you, dude?
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Function Call. Today we have an especially cool episode because we have a special guest. We have Amal Hussein joining us from, what is it?
From the internet.
No, from the internet.
Let's just stick with the internet. I don't need to publicize my home address to all these randos, so we can stick with that.
Okay, definitely not New York then.
I'm very close to New York. I'm right by the New York border. Yeah.
Okay.
I live in the Berkshires. I live in the Berkshires.
Thanks for coming on a late call.
Yeah. I used to live in Boston and I live in the Berkshires now. So yes, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Looking forward to ranting with y'all.
Oh, is that where we're going? That's perfect. Because we also have Grant on the show. Yeah.
Hello,
we have
I'm
a special
Grant.
Segment for him. Called the Grant Rant sometimes. So a little background on this show. Like I kind of connected with Amal a while back. I don't even remember what we connected to talk about, but I was listening to you as one of the hosts on JS Party and always impressed by the kind of perspective that you bring. I always feel like it comes from a place of like clearly you've been doing this for a long time and have senior level perspective and insights, and like you've seen some shit. Basically,
I've seen some shit. I've built some shit. I've made some shit. I've broke some shit. I've seen some shit. Yeah, all the shits. Not all bad. Not all equal. But they have definitely contributed to my, I would say, like old lady voice. Kind of wagging fingers at young white men on the internet.
No, but you know what? I think that that's also super cool. Like the quote unquote old lady voice. You had a tweet the other day that was about like keeping things simple in a stack. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that kind of comes from that same
things going viral
from that same area. Cause I feel the same. I feel the same way, like old man yelling at cloud, you know, with how wild web development is getting these days. And it's like, man, when you just go back to the basics, it keeps things easier to work with, easier to live with. And I don't know. It just felt like a full circle sort of thing to me. So the subject of the show that we wanted to talk about was, since you came on, I wanted to get into like a little bit of your perspective on developing the
the discussion we want to have on the show is around developing a like a senior engineering mindset. And I'm not really sure what that means, and that's something that I kind of asked Austin when he talked to me about the like the title of the show and the subject that we're going to talk about. And so it's like I guess the first thing I want to ask you, Amal, is what would a senior engineering mindset be like? What does that mean?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I mean, first of all, I think it's very important to acknowledge that as software engineers, there's like kind of two commitments that we're making to ourselves that we don't really consciously say, but it's definitely like a subconscious commitment. One is like commitment to lifelong learning. And the second is like a commitment to like being a self-flatulating, like self-abusing person, because this industry and job is so hard. What are we doing to ourselves, right? But kind of like the lifelong learning piece of this means that, like, you know, you're always going to be a student and you need to kind of continually stay hungry and stay humble and push yourself forward unless you happen to be in a position where you know for a fact that like your company's code is never going to change. You never have to do anything. You just have to keep doing the same exact work. Only then, and you're never going to get fired. You can retire there safely. You can cover your expenses and you're good to, you know, financially. Like that is the only circumstance that I think justifies a software engineer like coasting, you know what I mean? Okay. Or you're about to retire in a year. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like whether, and that is like the most senior person to the mid person, to the junior person, like we all need to stay hungry and stay humble. And part of that work of kind of, you know, boots to the ground, nose to the ground is really kind of pushing yourself forward in your craft, you know? And really understanding like what are the things that make up the wheel of software engineering, you know, what does excellence look like? You know, like the thing is like this whole industry is just so very young. It's still a very young industry. JavaScript is like 28, I don't know, like 30 something. I don't even know. Like, it's like just out of its teenage years, you know.
Yeah, 1997.
Yeah, like that. Exactly. Like to give you an example, no, not 97, but like way earlier.
Oh, 94.
Yeah, something like that. So, like, that's the thing is, like, where you like, you know, where you kind of compare software engineering, web development specifically, you know, even web development is a new type of engineering when it comes to like the full wider spectrum of software engineering, right? Like, we've been writing programs and coding for a long, long time, you know, but we haven't been doing web development a long time. And then when it comes to web development, we haven't been doing certain types of web development a very, very long time, right? So we're continually kind of pushing things forward. It is a very much like, it is like, you know, there's a living, breathing process that's at play here. And what you have to understand is like, you know, really, what are the pieces of the pie that you need to fill out? All of us have a natural set of strengths. And then we all have a natural set of weaknesses, right? And it's really a matter of like identifying what areas of weakness you have and how you want to push them forward, you know? And I think that's like, that's the topic to explore, like having that mindset, you know, whether it's code architecture, like mentorship, understanding kind of trade-offs, you know, coming up with like, you know, requirements, working closely with stakeholders, making sure you're keeping engineers honest in terms of complexity, you know, how are you planning for extensibility? How are you fixing tech debt? You know, there's just so many aspects and, you know, no one is the expert. And that's the thing, like, this is a very like humbling industry in the sense that like, there are no experts for any one thing. Like, you know, no one knows everything. And, you know, there isn't an expert of web development. Maybe there's an expert of a library, an expert of a language, expert of a web API, but there's no expert of like web development. You know what I mean? That's just not a thing, you know? And so, you know, you just have to understand like, what is the shape of skills that you want to build look like, you know, and keeping in mind that you should try to achieve a T shape, you know, where you have a lot of breadth, but you are able to go deep in one area and kind of focus on that. And you really want to be strategic about your focus areas, you know, because you don't want to tie that too much to something that's a library or a very specific domain that's kind of bespoke, you know. You want to make sure you're investing your deep T-shaped knowledge into areas that are going to be like return on investment year after year, you know.
What would those areas be? I think that's like a really interesting point, and you've brought up like a ton of stuff. Like, wow, that's a lot. But that in particular, right? The T-shape, going in deep and trying to leverage that. What comes to mind for you when you say something that's probably like a better bet?
Yeah. Well, so for example, you know, you kind of have to look at larger trends. You know, part of this is speculative, but not all of it. A lot of it is just rooted in just hard science and math, you know. This is better than that, you know?
Okay.
But really it's about understanding like what are the current trends. You know, we're trying to move towards hybrid, hybrid kind of models with the cloud and, you know, on-prem, and we have a need to figure out how we can leverage serverless so that we have less waste on the internet. You know, there's, you know, folks are figuring out how to manage their big data. Folks are figuring out how to, you know, ship less JavaScript and create better progressive web experiences. Folks are trying to understand, you know, how do I get into emerging markets? You know, so these are some of the problems, like how do we get, you know, JavaScript off the main thread? You know, how do I scale my database? You know, and, you know, all kinds of things like that. How do I lift and shift to the cloud from an on-prem? You know, so there's kind of these big kind of themes and questions and transitions that are going on in our ecosystem. But really, I would say that there's, you know, it's more like if you're going to specialize in performance and you want to go deep on that, don't learn how to use a library or a tool and call that your sense of expertise. Like, invest the time in understanding the foundational elements of what performance means, you know, for web applications, and pick one or two areas where you can really go deep, because even performance is a broad topic. And so it's not like you need to know every single thing about performance. You know, find your vertical and make sure that it's something that you can use to drive value for companies, making you more kind of, you know, less expendable candidate, right? That's an example.
That's huge. That's awesome. I can't help but think about like decisions that I've made, and maybe I need to rethink some.
Don't we all? I mean,
yeah, right.
Life is a journey. Life is a bitch, and then you die. You know, just that's kidding. Right.
That's not
really kidding, but
only got a few years. Let's try and extract some fun out of it.
Well,
right?
Yeah, if we're Bo Burnham, yeah, I think like there's several songs where he basically makes all these suicidal comments where he's like, I have 10 more years, 20 more years, 7 more years. I'm like, Bo, which one is it? Like, you know, make up your damn mind already. But yeah. Anyways, we'll stop making jokes about suicide. Sorry.
Yeah, now we need a trigger warning at the beginning of this episode. That's really interesting. Something that you said earlier sparked a memory that I have about some like very high level engineers on Twitter that for a while were.
First of all, I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to stop you right now, because like Twitter resume is like. Like the best engineers I know are like either not active on Twitter or like very minimally active on Twitter. Like they don't have like 100,000 followers. And then you have people that are like, I've been a dev role for 4 years and I have like 70 million followers. Yay. Yep. You know, like it's just very like, I just like internet notoriety or whatever. It's a very skewed thing on Twitter,
right,
especially.
Right.
So yeah, when you say not, he's a big, or he or she is a big person, you just have to kind of preface that a little, because it's like,
okay,
followers does not equal experience. Followers does not equal, like, you know what the fuck you're talking about.
That's like, totally fair. That's totally fair. So there was this trend for a period where they were posting like junior engineer for life.
Oh yeah. Junior
right,
for life.
Remember
yeah.
that time? Right, yeah. right.
This thing on some people's profiles.
Yeah, it kind of struck me at the time as like, because at the time,
it's like, dude, you have so much privilege. Yeah,
right.
You have so much privilege. Like, you can be a junior dev for life. Like, I need to move the fuck on. You know?
Yeah, I'm trying to add my resume and get money. Like, what is this?
Yep. Yeah. No, I know. It's a little. I mean, I think the intentions were good. I just think, you know, sometimes it's hard for people with privilege to relate to the struggle. You know, it's like when Marie Antoinette is like, "Let them eat cake." You know, it's like, Madame, the people are starving. Let them eat cake. You know,
it's like the nutritional value of cake, right?
Yeah. Like, So you know. So. I mean, and Twitter is problematic for me with a lot of newcomers, because, you know, they kind of follow the same people that are kind of preaching messages that are not very meaningful. and it kind of FOMO producing, anxiety producing, imposter syndrome producing. And like, what people don't understand, like they don't know the industry well enough to even understand like, who are these people? And what do they actually do? Are you like an open sourcer? Do you work at a company? Are you a DevRel? Are you a software engineer? Are you a manager? Are you, what are you, you know? Right. Front end, back end, you know? So they just are like, oh, people like Twitter, they're talking about something I want to know more about, you know? And so, you know, that's where kind of like, it's not always linear, right? Like 100,000 followers doesn't mean like high quality tweets that are meaningful and nutritious for your brain, right? And so, you know, so what happens is, you know, you have all these young kind of newbies that are like, don't understand like that, like this is somebody's job to like engage with the community and fly around and go to every conference. And so what happens is like, you have this impossible bar, right? Like where people are like, oh, I need to work 8 hours a day. I need to speak at conferences. I need to podcast. I need to blog. I need to da, 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 da. And they don't have the context to understand like, this is this person's job, you know? And granted, right. Like I'm a person who actually like, I'm like a principal software engineer and I have a very complicated, busy job, you know, but I make time for community because it's like a passion thing for me. And I don't do as much as I could because obviously I have other commitments, but it is like a second job. You know, I don't want to glamorize it. You know what I mean? It's not like, it's hard work. It's not like easy, you know? So I don't want to fetishize it more for these kids. So, you know, that's the problem. What were you saying, Austin?
That you say that as you're doing your second podcast of the day.
I know. I don't want to make that glamorous though. Like,
No, but it is like it is a passion thing. And I don't know, like you touched on some interesting things there that are like, I'd like to go into more because I feel like there's a weird thing about passion in the industry and expertise and the people that say, oh, you need, like, if you're not going to be passionate about this career, you're in the wrong industry. And then the people that are like, you know, on the other end that are like, no, you can just like show up and collect a paycheck. And, you know, where like I get both vibes from you. So what do you think about that whole conversation?
Yeah, I think the same way feminism is a choice, like this is also a choice. I don't think there's right or wrong. I think the point is people should have a choice. People should feel like if they want to live, eat, breathe tech 24/7, 7 days a week, they can do that. And if they want to check in at 9 a.m. and check out at 5 p.m., they can do that. And there shouldn't be a ton of judgment either way, right? And, you know, same like, and the feminism analogy is that, you know, just because, you know, because I'm a woman that gets married and has kids and, you know, is a stay-at-home mom doesn't mean I'm not a feminist, right? Like demonstrating feminism isn't limited to like burning my bra and like, you know, never having a conversation with a man, right? Like, you know what I mean? That's not, you know, so it's just, it's not binary. And that's the whole point is, you know, and what we've done is we've set these standards for people and it's kind of crept into our ideologies. And for me, like I've been on this big kick lately where I've just kind of like, I'm sick of the Valley, man. Like, you know, Silicon Valley founder bro culture has kind of creeped that hustle, fucking die and hustle, dying, whatever, trying, like stupid mantra that they tell themselves while they like sniff drugs. Like that has basically crept into our culture as software engineers. Like, you know, we are trying to hustle, die, like until we die. Yada, da, 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 da. I want to have like 7 side gigs and a full-time job and I want to blog and I want to go to conferences and da, 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 da. Like, yeah, man, I'm like, that's so cool. No, like you need to like focus on wellness, study and in a sustainable pace, you know, give your brain a break, step away, nourish, recharge, and understand that this is a marathon. And at the end of the day, it's only with yourself. Like you're not in a marathon with anybody else. You know, I could have the same amount of experience. I could do all the same things, work at the same companies as someone else. And we could end up having very different paths, you know, down the line. You know, so it's really just kind of like, just, I think, acknowledging that and making space for those kinds of ideas in tech, you know, because I think that would allow more people to enter our community and stay and feel welcome and have a sense of belonging, you know, without feeling FOMO or that they're not good enough or, Like, that's the stuff that kills me. It's like, who said you're not good enough? Who? Like, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. So as far as the things, like the things you shouldn't focus on that we covered with like the Twitter and the whatever, what do you think would actually, what do you think would be constructive advice for the things to focus on if someone wanted to get somewhere like principal level engineer? What are the things that you think are nutritious for your career that are going to like push you to the next level without burning you out or, you know, feeling that FOMO?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. Time to talk positive, happy things now. So I'm going to just shift my brain. Take that chip off my shoulder.
You got some stuff to get off your chest. Let it out.
I have a lot of passion. Thank you for letting me let my hair down, so to say. So like really, you know, if you're interested in pushing yourself, you know, to kind of, I would say, grow as opposed to sustain, you know, because there's different levels of effort and input required, right? You kind of really, first of all, just need to get really good at like introspection and like understanding yourself and your weaknesses. And the way you do that is by actively soliciting feedback from people who are kind of in competitive roles, you know, whether they're CEOs or athletes, they're chiseled to the tip because they're constantly getting feedback and seeking it and measuring it. And, you know, so they have these very tight loops. And so you kind of need to set some goals for yourself and start getting some feedback as to kind of like what it would take for you to achieve those goals. What do you think what do people think are limiting factors for you, you know, towards achieving those goals? What are you good at? You know, what do you need to work on, you know, and then kind of like put together a list of like, okay, these are the things I want to focus on right now as target areas. You can't do it all. We're working on ourselves until the last breath we take, right? We're never done. Like software, humans are never a finished product, you know, always baking, right? So kind of once you exactly. Yeah.
Prone to errors.
Yeah. That too, right? Sure. But like, yeah, so solicit feedback, get a baseline for where you are. And then it's a matter of like finding what's passionate for you. Like, what do you really like doing? What really makes you shine? And don't be shy about it. Maybe you're more interested in product. Maybe you're more interested in backend. Maybe you're more interested in Python than JavaScript. Maybe, you know, whatever it is, just follow that, because, you know, kind of like passion meets talent meets opportunity is like where the magic happens, you know? And so, you know, understand where you fit into the organizational matrix and where is it that you are trying to go? What do you want to do next? Are you a junior engineer that's trying to be senior? Are you a senior engineer that's trying to be staff? Are you staff trying to be principal? Are you principal trying to be a director of engineering, architect? Like, what are you trying to do? You know, maybe you're trying to make a lateral role into product or QA or something else, whatever, or different part of the stack. Whatever it is, you need to understand where you are, where do you want to be? Understand, like, is the company that you are currently working for able to support those goals? Are you going to be able to get the skills for that next thing that you want to do? If not, you know, where can you go to get them, right? If you can, then like who at your organization is good at the job that you want, and see if they can mentor you officially or unofficially. I can tell you that like more than half of the people that I consider mentors don't know that I consider them mentors. They would just think we're friends. And I finally told one of my friend mentors, who I'm calling now Friendtor, one of my friendtors, that he was a Friendtor, and he was like, oh my God, wow, I had no idea. You're tricking me. I was like, mm-hmm. Taking notes, you know. It's but like you
mean you didn't just swap me for friendship?
Seriously. Like, well, no. So
ulterior motives.
Well, so here's
trying
the
to
thing.
Level up.
Yeah, trying to level up, bitch. Yeah, no, seriously. Like, you have to surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. It is the only way you will grow. If you are constantly the smartest person in the room, run the fuck away. Like, that is a no growth scenario for you. Because if you're not growing, you're dying, you know, in our industry. So like, you need to kind of push that forward. And so, so there's a minimum level of input required to stay sustainable, and then there's more input required to grow, right? So you need to kind of surround yourself with people that are smarter than you, follow their work, talk to them, you know, find podcasts where you're able to kind of like give your brain that nutrition, and understand that you should be investing in organizational dynamics, engineering leadership. You know, you should be reading books like The Manager's Path and Pragmatic Programmer, Mythical Man Month, Radical Candor. What's the one I'm thinking about?
I don't know. You just listed like seven.
Accelerate, you know? So just start investing in your education, both from like an organizational leadership perspective, but also start going deep on that T, right, of that technical expertise, assuming you still want to be in a technical role, you know. So pick up some books. Like, that's one of the best ways to learn, really. Async, easy to pick up, hard to get distracted with a incoming online message, right? Get work to pay for it. You know, in an ideal world, our jobs should be giving us 20% time just to study, because that's how much it takes to stay viable, you know. And that's another show topic for another day. You know, get work to cover it, invest in subscriptions for good content, whether that's Pluralsight, Lynda, whatever. Like, invest in a couple of good platforms, buy some books, listen to free conference talks online, go to conferences if you can. You just kind of have to become a little academic about it, you know? And that's how it is for me. I mean, stuff is a passion, you know, it's not work. It's like, I'm like really passionate about this industry and trying to like leave it in a better place, you know, and also like make it more welcoming for people who look like me. And, because we need to save the web, you know. It's not going to save itself. It's in a lot of trouble right now for lots of different reasons, whether it's firewalls or native apps or, you know, poor user design, you know. We're kind of losing that battle in emerging markets where people are coming online for the first time. They're all just, the internet to them is Facebook. It's native apps that are in their language, you know, that work fast and don't use a lot of data, you know. Yeah. It's like majority of people on earth. Okay. So, you know, so the web needs help, but, you know, I think those are some key things. And I think, you know, understanding what type of an organization is going to help you get to the place that you want to be, whether it's a big, small, or medium, like understand like what the trade-offs are for different types of org sizes. And, you know, being honest with yourself about what types of experience you need in order to get to the next level, you know.
Yeah. I think that's like a really good point. And I want to ask you something that is maybe just a little bit more detail about that. My history has been, in order to progress in my career, I've had to leave companies. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, most
every
people.
Company I've been at, like, historically, they either didn't have the capacity to help me grow or just outright refuse to. That's a little bit different where I'm at now, which is great. I'm sure at some point I'll run into the same problem here too. Like, what do you think that's about? I mean, it's like they want to hire a cog to just turn that part of the machine and think it's going to stay the same size. It's just this really mechanical thinking. It bothers me. I'm sure it bothers you.
Yeah. And I think what's also tough is they don't adjust people's salaries fast enough. So someone gets hired in as a junior dev making X, and then in a year they're just kick ass and they could get a job somewhere else with like a 40% raise, but their one company is only willing to give them a 10% raise. Like, that's also stupid, you know? But I think a lot of this actually just comes from just general deficiencies that we have in our industry around retention. We don't have good retention plans, especially for engineers that like actually really could benefit from something like a formal sabbatical after working at a company for 3 or 4 years. Go take a month off, go take 3 months off, go take 6 months off, go take 1 year unpaid leave and you still have a job, you know. Google actually has that. You can leave for 2 years and then you can come back and not have to interview for the same role. You know, assuming you don't work somewhere else in the meantime, I think, or something like that. I could be wrong. There could be no strings attached, but the point is, like, you know, it's a very young industry and we are still very much in trial and error mode, you know, so it's really hard to even like peg down a single best practice because that's a moving target, you know? So I think we're still figuring it out, and I think it's going to be painful for the foreseeable future, because I don't think it's an answer that we're going to have soon enough, because I think the rate of change for our industry is going to always be higher than like our ability to solution that problem, you know?
The problems that you outline in response to that question sound like exactly the same problems that contribute to like just really bad interview structures that are just biased in all kinds of nasty ways.
Yeah, I think, Austin, sorry, I was really busy. I didn't get a chance to joke back with you, but you pinged me about...
I don't remember. It was like... This
is why you shouldn't do drugs, kids.
Yeah, exactly. I had like just read up on something and was just like, man, you know those times that interviewers ask questions that have literally nothing to do at all with the work that you have to do. And this happens so much, especially on the front end. That's like 95% of your job on the front end is moving boxes and like making sure boxes align and things like that. But God help you if you don't know the best way to sort, I don't know, books in a bookshelf. Example.
Yeah, I know.
It's wild.
I think in interviews we should get not just unrelated, like totally unrelated, way out there questions. Like, my favorite interview question.
We should be like, sir, ma'am, are you guys willing to take some mushrooms? Because
oh my god,
we find our candidates do very well when they're dripping.
This interview is going to get weird.
One of my favorite interview questions is to ask.
Here we have this trusty guide.
I ask.
We call him Trippy. Yeah.
Oh
my
god!
Just kidding.
Sorry. I've
been smoking marijuana for like 2.5 hours, so I apologize.
Perfect podcast prep, which is wild to me because
I was socializing with my friend Paul, so.
Yeah. I don't know how you are able to just like boom, 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 go on with these topics. And it's like, it feels so scripted that you just have it ready for some of these questions. And then you're just like, yeah, I've been smoking for the last couple of hours. It's just,
I'm like the most coherent pothead. It's crazy. I don't smoke a ton of weed, but when I do, I'm still working up there. I think I think about this stuff, you know. I think a friend of mine pointed out to me once upon a time that I am an intellectual, you know. He's like, yeah, you're absolutely an intellectual, like you ponder big philosophical questions and you're always trying to connect the dots between things. And I was like, oh my god, yeah, you're fucking right, I am an intellectual, thank you very much. You know, and, you know, one of the things that I really want to be making more space for over the next year, and this has definitely been a personal struggle for me, is kind of putting that kind of intellectualism into action, you know, via writing and creative projects and through art, you know. And so, you know, there's a lot of kind of there's a lot of things brewing, and you know, I feel like I'm gonna have my kind of like more formal coming out party over the next year or so. And so I'm excited to kind of see where that takes me. Yeah.
Sweet.
But thank you for the compliments. Yeah.
That's interesting. So like you didn't, prior to your friend making that comment, you just never thought of yourself as an intellectual?
No, never.
That's interesting. I mean, I think that kind of speaks to the
I
power.
I thought I was
of,
a
like,
nerd.
I mean, it just seems so obvious to me talking with you that like you you think about things deeply and you care about stuff, and like the result of that is somebody who is like well intentioned, well researched, and well presented, right? Like no matter what your state, like clearly this is something that that you care about, and that comes through.
I'm gonna vape now. Yeah,
do what you gotta do. Do what you gotta do.
This is a marijuana vape. So, anyways, yeah, keep going.
Yeah,
celebratory.
Yeah. So, but this brings me back to something that, you know, I think people hear this and they're like, all right, in order to be successful, like I have to be passionate, right? Like, I know just from talking to you, I don't think that that's where you're at, but I think that might be what people are perceiving. And right. So like, in my opinion, passion is used to exploit people, especially juniors. Absolutely. Like it's just rough. They're like, absolutely. Oh, you're a junior. You got to put in these hours and this and that. And you mentioned that, but like they hear this. Yeah. And they
I mean,
hear
the sad thing is you do. I mean, you know, there is this curve in web development or the software engineering specifically, like where it's like that first like 40% is like a really steep, you know, and then it kind of levels out, and then you get to the next thing and it's steep again, and you know, you get these long plateaus where and you have like really sharp learning curves, you know, and we're all on that same track, just everybody's at a different point in the graph, you know. But I just wanted to be very clear, like the word passion and what you said about it being used for exploitation, like abso-fucking-lutely. And yes, you have to work hard, especially at the beginning, more so than you ever do. You know, I'm not sitting there doing a tutorial or doing a course once a week or whatever, like some engineers I know that are much, you know, much more junior than I am, you know. I'm not doing that type of active investment anymore because like there's other areas that like contribute to the things that I'm looking to grow next, you know, and they don't come from those types of sources. And so, you know, like the word passion, I think, is beginning to be formally kind of acknowledged in our industry as negative, you know, similar to the word rock star or unicorn, you know, in job applications. Yeah. So they're starting to remove it from like job applications. Like we're looking for a passionate person, you know, so I don't think you need to be passionate to like write a bunch of code. You just need to know how to write the code, you know, mm-hmm. You can punch in and punch out and that's okay. You know?
So if I can push back on that really quick, and not to defend it, but just
sure, you can defend it
like
if you
the
want.
Thought that, well, okay, just for the sake of conversation, I think that when you say you don't need to be passionate to write code, you just need to know what code to write. Mm-hmm. I think knowing the code to write can be the product of being passionate and like putting in the
time.
Or
being experienced.
So right, but I mean, talking about the curve, like starting out. I think that from my journey, like I was passionate to begin with and like studying a lot to get my first job and like building side projects and going to meetups and like,
yeah,
I don't think you have
to
be
that.
We
all had to do that.
Yeah. 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 And maybe, okay. So maybe it's not passion, but just like, you do have to just keep working.
You have to hustle and stay hungry. And remember, we talked about this in the beginning, the criteria is you got to be willing to be a lifelong student. Unless you have that definitive job security for the next 45 years, right? Which nobody does.
But you know, but the study plan, it sounds like the study plan changes after a certain period of time where like, you know, where you're investing shifts. And that like that's what I'm really curious about, because like that's not where I am, but that is definitely where I want to be, is in that position where like I'm hearing not really like office politics, but definitely like dealing with business dynamics and like handling those interests, right? Like, so it sounds like that becomes much more important as you grow in your career, or I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, you know, Biggie said it, more money, more problems. And, you know, that's absolutely true. I mean, the higher you climb, the more ambiguity you have to deal with, you know, like as a person who a lot of my time at work, maybe 80% of my time or more, sometimes 100% of my time is spent in the future. Like I am one of those people that isn't responsible for maintaining the current. I am responsible for designing what's next. And I have like most of my time in the future. And then the other time I have is actually in the past, because it's cleaning up our past mistakes, figuring out our migration plans, working on tech debt, making sure that we're paying down that interest. You know, I'm a heavy advocate for that inside of my organization. And, you know, and we have a phenomenal team because of it, you know, and workable code because of it, you know. But like, you know, I spend a lot of time in the future, and that means like I am pretty much in like the waters of heavy ambiguity. I'm responsible for defining things for other people so that like they can take my kind of chunkable architecture kind of proposal or strategic implementation plan or the like how we're going to do this. They can take that and distill it down into like finite engineering tasks and code, right? So I'm still coding, I'm still building blocks, but they're just through people and at a much higher level where I'm orchestrating that work. And of course, I still write code, you know, just not every day, not for hours a day either. I'm involved with code review process. And of course, like I'm involved in the input to that code, right? Like how did this code even come to be? How do we know what we're doing? How do we know how to integrate? Like that's me, right? So, and that space, like as you go up that pyramid, you know, different levels of oxygen, different levels of clarity, different levels of security, different levels of emotional support. You know, so before I kind of moved back into an IC role, I was an engineering manager at NPM for a little while. And in that job, it was shocking to me how little emotional support I had without seeking it actively, right? Like I had made some really close friends and developed some mentorships at the company, but that was like through me being open to it and actively seeking it. But like managers don't get consoled. Nobody's your friend. Everybody thinks you're the enemy. And they don't help each other out. Like my other manager colleagues by default are not going to check in on me and say, yo, what up? Like the same way I would do for my teammates or yeah. If I was a tech lead, you know, and my boss as the manager of managers is too fucking busy dealing with actual other problems. Like, right. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, so you kind of have to self-soothe and, you know, that like learning, like, you know, kind of going through that experience at a very difficult company. It was a fascinating job. I mean, it'll be in my memoir, like, you know, but, you know, no, really, I mean, it's, seriously. I got to write about it before I completely forget, but, I'll just like put myself through hypnosis to like force myself to remember if I forget before I write it down. But, no, but like, you know, it's, you kind of have to understand your comfort level and be honest with yourself and know that there's no shame regardless of where you stand. Like maybe you're somebody who's okay with, lack of definition and ambiguity, and maybe you're someone who isn't, and you freak out at that, right? So you have to understand like where you fall in the spectrum, because like that also should influence like what level you want to rise to and what part of the org you want to be on, you know. So
I think it's also interesting, like this conversation has gone through the context of your journey. It's covered so many different aspects of like the path that the software engineer can take, because you've gone, you know, you're principal engineer now, you've been individual contributor, you've gone into management, you've gone back to individual contributor. Mm-hmm. And so part of me wants to share with listeners that it's not linear, right? Like it's not just you're here today and tomorrow you're going to be a manager and the next day you're going to be whatever. And I guess from where I'm at today, like, can you share from your journey, like what sort of thoughts or intuition you had that led to those decisions going from management back to individual contributor? How did you decide when to leave a job when the job that you wanted to take, like why that job versus another? Is it that you're leaving a job because it's a mess, or you're leaving to go and get, you know, the next level up? Like, when, like in your journey, like what are some things that you've experienced that have like helped you choose those, like make those pivotal decisions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so great questions and great thoughts. So first of all, just to kind of comment on your earlier thing, I was just reading the other day, that like linear career ladders are becoming a thing of the past. Career development and personal development now looks more like a matrix where you go this way, that way, zigzag. Da, 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 da. So like the whole concept of like linear progression is like BS, especially for our industry because of how people move around. Like sometimes you're an expert front end person and then you started another company and you're doing back end work and you're a junior. You're a junior backend engineer now, yeah. You know, so we kind of zigzag through our career too, as we switch jobs and have to come up to speed on domain. And maybe you're the expert in Python, but you don't know anything about how this fintech works and these financial futures work. And now you're freaking struggling trying to write this algorithm for this business process that you don't actually still understand, you know, like we're like constantly yo-yoing in terms of like our kind of confidence spectrum. You know, but that being said, like for me, like very early in my career, like I kind of, you know, kind of just, I mean, you know, I would say like really like rapidly accelerated, you know, like I was kind of like coding for like 1 year professionally and like was immediately given a promotion to like a level two engineer that, you know, for like, you know, 2 to 4 years. And then the year after that, I was promoted. And after that, I was so good, you know, because I had been doing community engagement, speaking, studying, pushing myself, side projects, hustle. I really kind of stretched myself when I was very junior. And for me, you have to understand, like, as a person of color, as a woman, you know, we have to work doubly as hard just to have a seat at the table, you know. So when you often see a person of color or somebody who's a minority in tech, like you have to just sit and like get, like pay homage to them for a little bit, because you have to understand like how much harder they've had to work to get the same job as their colleagues, you know, because they have to fight against discrimination, they have to fight against systemic bias, they have to fight against, you know, not having the emotional support system that their colleagues do at work, you know, not enough belonging, you know, not being wanted, you know, like being undermined, like, you know, like, you know, they're dealing with like things that you have no idea as like a white privileged person, you know, male or female, right? And so I should say cis to be like clear on that. But, you know, so for me, like when I left my first job, I had, you know, it was great because it was like a large corporation. I had some room to flail at the beginning, which is really what I always advise junior engineers. I always say like, hey, junior person, like go get your first job at a big company. Don't fucking work at an 8-person startup where you are like a point of failure for the company. Like you need room to fail. You need room to not be productive. You need room to learn. And like, you can't have like real business pressure on you. Like you cannot be an important person at the company. Like no one needs to even know your name. You're just a paycheck and an investment, because the company is investing in you so that, and with the hopes that you're going to stay there and, you know, contribute, right? Eventually, but it's not going to happen right away. In fact, like new engineers, even when they're experienced, are not productive at a company for 3 to 6 months. You know, that's why it's so expensive to retain and onboard engineers. You know, it's kind of crazy how many people whore around considering how expensive it is for them to start at a new company and how expensive it is when they leave a company, you know, whoa, like we got a lot of waste, you know, but like I left my first company with a lot of expertise on like enterprise systems. I had a lot of really great mentors at that company who really set the foundations for me. And I still quote them till this day, like the things that they teach me, I'm teaching other people on podcasts or I'm teaching my teammates, you know? So I worked at a place that had a really healthy open culture, like open feedback. It was a big enough org. There were big enough mistakes being made. There were big enough successes, you know. And I was actually like, I left that company as like a tech lead for like, you know, important projects, just kind of having 3 years of experience. And so, I left because even when they promoted me to that level three, like it still wasn't enough money for where I could be at another company. So I went to another company and got an immediate, like almost 40% raise. And just kind of since then, I've just been pushing my way. I kind of leave a company when I'm kind of done growing or when I have a story to tell about my successes there. And it's usually since then I've just left for more money and more responsibilities. So I've just kind of been like zigzagging and climbing, and kind of in the semi-pendulum swing right now as a principal engineer. Although for me, principal engineer is a bigger deal than engineering manager, because very few people get to this level.
Yeah,
and managers and most and most managers are just like total shitbags. Like, who shouldn't have that? Especially engineering managers. Most engineering managers are shit. Honestly, if you're like a good human being and you know how technology works, you don't even have to know how to write code. Like, please become a fucking engineering manager. We desperately need you. It's like a major shortage. Because what they do is that they take the best coder and they're like, you lead the team, you manage, you stop coding the thing you're good at and you fucking do this other thing you don't know anything about or have any fucking natural skills or aptitude towards, you know?
Yeah, so it's just they're totally different skill sets. It's a wild shift to try and take somebody who's like mechanically inclined and have them manage human beings.
Yeah. Great. Engineering leadership is different than business and people leadership and people management. And, you know, and companies who acknowledge that are much more successful than companies that don't, you know? I don't remember why I was shitting on engineering manager. Oh yeah. It's because I think I have a bigger deal job now than I did. So you know what I mean?
Mic drop.
Yeah. I went into the engineering manager role as kind of like, you know, kind of staff level tech lead, project lead, you know, senior level engineer. And, you know, I definitely had a lot of experience and influence, but it wasn't at a big scale. Where I had direct influence at a big scale. I'd contributed to big scale, but I wasn't influencing strategy at big scale. And, you know, my friend was like, well, you know, Amel, you know, when you go from that role to engineering manager, you're going to be managing one team and you're going to have one focus as an engineering manager. But when you're a principal engineer that goes into management, you're leading teams. You're not leading a team, you know, because as a principal engineer, you have that organizational level of influence. And I've exercised that muscle very well since I've been at Indigo. And so, you know, what happens is when you move up, you really move up, you know? I'm putting in some time right now. It's kind of a grind. You know, this is a very difficult job, very rewarding, but I would have a very different set of challenges as a man, as a director. And in order for me to serve my, you know, future reports well, like I need to put in the time to make sure that like I can be supportive to them as an engineering leader. Does that make sense? Like, you don't want to just like I'm a firm believer, like as you climb the ladder, so to say, like this ladder that isn't linear anymore, as you climb this matrix, non-linear ladder, whatever, you should always be able to do the job of the people below you that you're supporting. And this is a very high bar. I don't expect to have full alignment from people on this. It's kind of like one of those like self-excellence bullshit mantras, but like, it's important to me because I really think a lot about the people that I'm supporting in my role. And, you know, I want to make sure that I'm in the best position to actually support them, because I know what it feels like to have a manager that can't support you in the way that you need. And I know what it's like to have a tech lead or a person in charge or the more senior engineer, like when they can't give you what you need, you know, it sucks, you know. So I should be able to give my direct reports like what they need. I should be able to give them more than what they need, and I should be able to push them and support them in their career growths too, you know. And so it's just a different set of challenges. So I'm just putting in my gr- grunt work time now. And this is like all kind of, you know, in the hopes of it paying dividends when the time is, when that time comes.
Yeah, there's a term I've heard you use on other shows that I've listened to, when you use the term force multiplier.
Oh yeah.
Like managers or principal engineers or whatever, as you get up.
My job is to be a force multiplier. Yeah. And I have a very hard time delegating also, for what it's worth, like just to leave. So I'm not always like humble bragging over here. I can talk about some weaknesses. I have a hard time delegating, you know, and it's a challenge for me because one, I like selfishly just want to do it all. I like love problems and I'm like, I want to collect all the points, you know, I want to play all the games. I want to play all the levels. I want to know all the characters and all the Easter eggs or whatever. Right. So there's that aspect. And the other aspect is like, wanting to have ownership and like knowing that, like, if I do it, it's done right. You know, and not having a good muscle for me around like, you know what, you just got to coach the other person through it and you have to be okay with it being 80% good. Like I'm a perfectionist core to the core and it's like horrible. Like it's a horrible thing. It's like a disease, you know? And I always have to remind myself, like, don't let perfect get in the way of good. Don't let perfect get in the way of good. Don't let perfect, you know, it's like my mantra. And I've gotten a lot better. But like, you know, part of that delegation problem comes from like just wanting to have it be perfect and have me do it the right way once, as opposed to having to coach someone else that's more junior through it. Granted, like the junior engineers that I work with, they could run circles around me. We have really sharp engineers at Indigo and we're hiring, by the way. and it's an ethical company working on like real problems, not like Snapchat part 9 or whatever the hell stupid Valley's up to, you know. It's like VR porn, you know, that's the startup
solving the real problems. VR yes, porn.
Yes. What are we gonna do when the next pandemic happens? You have to be prepared, you know. So, gotta up your ante, guys, you know. Anyways, you know, so you know, so delegation is a challenge, you know, because of that. But also if I'm, you know, I've been really trying to be very introspective about this lately, you know, and I'm going to share something very personal that I've kind of been able to surface from this introspection. You know, like one of the things that's like really, you know, hard for me as a person of color and as a woman is like, I don't always get credit for my ideas and my contributions. And that happens more so naturally as you move into a leadership role, like you're kind of controlling things from above and it kind of goes through a chain of command, you know. So that happens naturally. But because I'm a woman, because I'm a person of color, because I'm whatever, you know, it just happens more often as well, you know. And so while I currently work in an environment that's very, you know, team focused and, you know, we finish the cross line together, people use we, people are very quick to pat each other on the back, you know, so we have that culture here, but I still struggle with it, you know, because I'm that like, really well, sucks. This is my idea, my strategy, and this person's now going to execute on it and they get the credit, you know, and it's like, I want to make sure I get the credit. And the only way I get the credit guarantees if I do it, but then I'm a bottleneck and I'm not being a force multiplier, you know, so it's this Achilles heel for me, but I have to overcome it in order to get to the next level. Like, this is my steep incline right now. And, you know, I need to really master this, because I am very results oriented as a person and I'm not as much of a credit hog as I'm making myself seem. I'm actually more always just trying to get the work done and do the right thing. And you know, I don't actually care as much about who does it, but the problem is like when I don't get credit for my work, it hurts, you know? Like I've been left out of slideshow presentations where I architected the entire fucking app and like they didn't even like they're like, oh sorry, we forgot that you were the first person on this project and then you handed it off to us, like we put it over the finish line, but sorry for not recognizing your contributions, we've retroactively updated the documentations and we're assholes. Like I've had stuff like that happen to me, you know? So it just, it sucks. Yeah. But you know, it's okay though, because I am so blessed in so many other ways. And, you know, really it could be worse. I mean, I could be like Ivanka Trump, or, you know, I could be.
Hey, you don't have to discredit. You don't have to discredit that it hurts. Like, it just hurts, and it hurts. It hurts, you know? It's like, it's a good reminder for everyone out there that, like, we're all people. We're all working with other people, and we like working with people that care about us. And so, you know, take a moment and make sure you're not taking credit. Yeah. Be good to the people you work with.
Yeah, for sure. And be good to yourselves too.
Yeah.
You know, be good to yourselves. Yeah. Don't smoke marijuana on podcasts. I can't believe I'm now like on the internet. My parents don't even know I smoke weed. And thank God they don't fucking listen to any of my podcasts, because hopefully they'll never find out.
I know, they listen to us.
Oh shit, no. You know what's so funny? Fuck you, first of all. You know, I actually really want to talk to my parents about marijuana and just drugs in general. Like, I've never done anything other than weed, and I didn't even drink alcohol until I was like 28. Like, now for like the first time in my life, I like want to do mushrooms and LSD, and I'm like, oh my God, drugs are totally for adults who have figured themselves out. Like, I don't know if they're for any other type of person, you know. They're definitely not for children, but like, they're definitely for adults who know what they want in life. And I feel like I'm at that stage right now, and I'm like, bring it on, you know? So it's because of that. And I have just a very open personality in general, and very open with the people in my life. And so I don't like having secrets. And so like, I feel like I really need to just tell my parents, like, hey, and for me it's therapeutic, but like, hey, I definitely smoke marijuana, and hopefully in the future I like will have done, you know, hallucinogenics. So I don't know, so mom and dad,
got a good hook,
accept it.
On some mushrooms, DMs are open.
Yeah, I live in the Berkshires. I'm gonna drive 1 hour radius.
Only accept delivery. Yeah,
having open conversations with your parents is a good thing. I feel like I should say, if you're going to do drugs, do it responsibly.
Oh, absolutely.
To anyone listening.
Yeah.
And don't do illegal drugs and whatever else. Is there anything else that we should do to cover our ass?
Well,
on
it's
that?
Not illegal where I am, but yeah, I know what
right,
you mean.
Right. Yeah. Legal stuff that's
I don't think you need to cover your ass. Yeah, no, we're talking about legal drugs in part of the country there where it's legal. And yes, we're not encouraging.
I don't think mushrooms are legal anywhere.
It is legal in Somerville, which is a place my husband and I used to live.
Oh, that is wild.
Somerville, Massachusetts is right next to Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Boston. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yep.
I don't know. I've been clean for like 22 years. So like,
clean.
I don't know.
That's so funny. Okay.
Any of that.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's a good thing, I think. But anyway, I think you're going to wrap the show, right? I got to go.
We're getting there on time. I know that you're on a little bit later time zone than us. So I appreciate you staying on so late. I want to just like, wrap up with some things that we covered. It sounds like hustling is going to kind of be necessary at whatever stage you're at in the career,
especially early. Think about like, you're a sprout. Yeah. You need all that energy to like get your hand out of the ground, you know, and say I'm here. Like,
yeah, and once you it gets easier after the first job, but I think people are tired. Hearing that, yeah, the first job's the hardest.
It is
not helpful.
As Sheryl Crow said it, you know, she said, "The first cut is the deepest, baby." Exactly. I know, right? So,
oh, man. This is now a karaoke podcast.
Yeah, first cut is the deepest. First job is the hardest to get, hardest to keep, hardest to, and you know what? I gotta be, you know, kids like. You're going to learn 90% of what you need to learn at the job. Okay. Even if you've freaking created like 17 apps, like you're going to come across code that is going to look like it's foreign and that it is not JavaScript. Like, you know, and that's okay. Right? That's what you're there to learn. They're investing in you when you don't have any experience. Like, they're taking that bet on your career. And so, you know, take advantage of that time. Be vulnerable at work. And I know that can be really challenging, especially for folks who are underrepresented, you know, to be vulnerable. But, you know, I would encourage you to be vulnerable, to not have an ego, and to like do a lot more listening and reading than you do talking. And also a lot of question asking more than like stating comments, you know, and then just like, don't believe everything you see on Twitter, and like my, and my tweets included, like, you know, so there's that. And well, just understand that like, yeah, that just, you're going, it's, yeah, the, like, no amount of boot camp work or side projects is going to prepare you for your first experience working in a code base that's at scale, right? Like, if there are like, you know, a few thousand people that work at your company, there's a few hundred people in engineering, you know, you've been working on your, you know, Rails app, like, you're the only contributor for, you know, that is very, very, very different than like working on an old code base with lots of cruft, with lots of people across lots of distributed systems. Like, nothing is gonna prepare you for that, right? So just know that it takes time, and I promise you it will get better. And you know, so just be vulnerable, stay humble, keep learning, ask questions, you'll get there. Like, ultimately, like, when we're talking to junior engineers, we're already talking to a self-select group of people, right? Like, these are already people who've kind of identify that like they enjoy problem solving. This is something they could do for a living. I could do this for at least 8 hours a day, five times a week, right? That's what they've already said that to themselves, right? So we don't have to convince them, right? We just have to show them the way, you know?
Yeah. You're going to make mistakes. Let people know what you want to do, where you want to go. As far as for the more like mid or senior level developers, I think some of the advice that I gleaned from this conversation was, it's not linear. Like, you're going to go up and down. You're going to go side to side. It's okay if you go, it's okay if you go to management and that doesn't work out for you, because at some point, like, you need to figure out, is it the individual contributor track that you want to do? Do you want to work with people? Do you want to give up some of that control and perfection so that you can become a force multiplier and, you know, have a bigger impact through other people? And then some of the like principal level stuff gets weird because you start to turn into Dr. Strange. You got to live in the future and in the past at the same time. And just like,
It's fun. It's really fun, but it's definitely not for everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of strategic about those decisions and hops. And evaluate, you know, if you're going into management for the first time, like, give yourself 90 days and fire yourself after 90 days. Give yourself an exit plan, you know. Ideally, if you're going to be a first-time manager, I always advise people to do that at the same company where they have already built trust and clout and they understand the domain and the software, and they're not needing to like work at a new job, at a new role, a new domain, new stack. You know, there's so much new. You know, at the same company, if you're a first-time manager, you can just focus on being a first-time manager. Like, that's the what you're learning. You're not learning everything else about the company that you've already spent time learning, right? So that's a huge advantage. And then make sure you have an exit plan. You know, talk to your future manager and make sure that they know that, hey, like, let's check in 9 months, 6 months, 3 months, whatever. And, you know, if you don't want to do this anymore, like, that's okay. It shouldn't be seen as a demotion, you know? And you know, the other thing is like for senior folks, like you have to understand, like, we're, you know, this is part of the problem with a young industry. Like, you know, these career paths are not defined. Like, we, not everywhere has staff, principal, architect, whatever, you know, they just have these senior engineering bands where you have somebody who's worked for 4 years and 20 years are all in that same band, you know. Push back on that for your companies. They should be building out tracks for you that are more specific, and you know, you can get to the highest level of engineer, which probably is like distinguished engineer or something like that. Whatever it is, like, if you're not being supported and if your title isn't like accurately reflecting your job responsibilities, like, you're literally doing yourself an injustice. It's almost like you're like you have money in the bank and like you have like somebody's charging you like a dollar every day, you're like losing your net value, because you have to understand like every job you have is collateral for your next job, you know? And so if you have a bunch of responsibilities where, you know, someone's going to see you and be like, you're a senior engineer. Like, what the hell makes you think you can do this, 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 that? Like, I'm looking for somebody with like 10 plus years of experience and blah, blah, you know, like your title is your business card. And so just like, make sure that your title is like accurately reflecting your skill level and, you know, start having conversations.
Yeah. Where do you find that like definition of like the next thing that you can suggest your company give you this title that doesn't exist?
Yeah. So I think GitLab and Square have both published some really, I think maybe even GitHub. I know Google has it as well, published some good data out there at Microsoft as well, I think, on career ladders in engineering. So you get to see how all these different companies do it, you know, and they kind of have IC track, non-IC track, a few different options that you can do, different ladders you can climb. So, you know, definitely worth like putting some of those in the show notes if we can. And
for sure. I've seen the GitLab ones.
Yeah. But it would just be nice to have like a forum where companies could commit to those, some standardization around career ladders, or have like a map or a model for like, hey, our senior engineer is equivalent to this person's staff because we are a company at scale. You know, this is just a tiny startup. Like being a senior engineer at a startup, is that the same thing as a, being a senior engineer at Google? Like, let's be real, you know? So, you know, titles are BS as well in that regard, right? It's just make sure that—
Titles are your business card and BS.
Yeah, but if it's gonna be— Yeah, but if it's gonna be BS, at least have the BS be working for you, not against you.
When you're
looking for your next job, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's end on that. We sometimes do shout outs at the end of the show, but this one went kind of long. And I actually just want to take this time to give another shout out to Amal for coming on. Where can anyone find you? What's the best place to find you if anyone wants to follow you? And I totally recommend people do.
Twitter. And my DMs are open. So Twitter. At Nomad Techie.
Right. Yeah, no.
Amal, thanks so much for coming on. Also, this was like super, this is an exciting conversation, but I also learned a lot. So thanks.
I'm so glad. That's good. I see a success. Yeah. Done. Dopamine hit. Received. Pow. Done. Right. Done.
Yeah.
No, I really congratulations on the new podcast too. Yeah, it looks like you guys have got some good content on here as well. So
It's all right.
We try.
It's been a long
time. We do care about it.
Yeah.
You do. Yeah, check out Riverside too.
Yes,
100%. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks. That's it. That's it for the show. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for listening. Yeah. We'll
don't do drugs, kids.
Touch online.
At least wait until you're an adult.
Yeah.
That knows what you want out of life. Isn't Austin like this like weird like male model looking software engineer? Like this whole time he was talking to me.
Oh,
like,
my face.
You could be like a Bitcoin bro. Like you could be Peloton instructor.
My camera filter just went red.
I've seen him in person. It is 100% blue steel all the time.
Oh yeah.